With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. I've got a book this evening I've been really waiting to talk to you guys about. Really excited to discuss it. We've delved into it one or two times before, but it's Maoism, A Global History by Julia Lovell. And the section that I'm really keen on exploring is the role of Mao in the wars of Indochina, the Indochinese wars in Vietnam and Cambodia. There's an awful lot to say and to unpack. And her analysis begins with the American view of Maoist expansion in Southeast Asia, really what we think of as the domino theory, which was this rather flawed kind of Kennedy, Johnson, McNamara concept that one country falling to communism would inevitably lead to another, as if it was some sort of viral contagion. The literature of the time, the American sort of educational stroke propaganda videos of the time often talk about it in terms of it being a contagion, and that communism is like a disease that spreads. Now, the interesting thing here is that a standard view of this is that the United States sought to contain Soviet communism. But whilst this is true, Maoist communism, which had by the beginnings of the American involvement in the Vietnam War, long since diverged from its Soviet partner or former partner, that Maoist communism was, in the eyes of the USA, an equal threat. In fact, even sort of slightly worse, more unpredictable, more virulent, more transmittable. A lot of the geopolitical strategizing, the decisions taken, were less about containing Soviet communism in Asia, though the Soviets did back North Vietnam, but about preventing the spread of Mao Zedong thought. And on the part of the North Vietnamese, there was a cordial period of their relationship with China, and then an entirely hostile one as the North Vietnamese really found their feet as a revolutionary socialist state and required less intervention, less interference, and less oversight from China, much to the resentment of Mao. If you go back 6 months, something like that, I was talking about Chinese assistance in North Vietnam from the late 1940s all the way to Dien Bien Phu. So you can check out some of those podcasts there. But we're going to now get into examining what Julia Lovell's arguments regarding the relationship between the threat of Maoism and American foreign policy decision-making regarding Vietnam. Julia Lovell writes, "In 1964, the US Department of Defense released a short educational film, Red Chinese Battle Plan, to show their servicemen. Such productions are not usually renowned for their subtlety of analytical vision, and this one was no exception. Red China's Battle Plan," the narrator intoned to a sinister cymbal beat. "It is the blueprint for world revolution. Divide and encircle, conquer and enslave." The graphics show huge arrows extending from China to Asia, Africa, Europe, and South and North America. On reaching their targets, the arrows become a snarling dragon stretched across the entire world. Mao's blueprint for conquest is succeeding just as planned. Today, Communist China seeks to spread its own brand of global revolution, the ideological centre of a world enslaved. The film portrayed Mao's ambitions as global, but focused this fear on one territory overall, Vietnam. The film asserted it was the beachhead for global communist Maoist revolution. There, the Vietnamese communists were deliberately replicating Mao Zedong's guerrilla war of the 1940s. If Vietnam fell, so might the rest of the world. Lyndon Johnson, who after the assassination of John F. Kennedy escalated the US involvement in the war throughout the 1960s, reiterated the point in another public information broadcast in 1965 called Why Vietnam, which we'll turn to in a moment. John F. Kennedy had famously said that Vietnam was the place where essentially the Cold War would be decided, whether there would be the scope to roll back communism, which is the kind of the Kennedy doctrine, or not. Vietnam would be the battleground. The video, of course, that's being described here was far from being particularly nuanced. But it does tell us something really, really important, I think. To the 21st century era, the idea of the domino theory seems paranoid and slightly unnuanced and lacking in the depth of understanding that we now have about the realities of communist expansion and the intentions in Moscow and Beijing. But it was, for the most part, within the State Department, a sincerely held fear. There's nothing to suggest that the domino theory was a cynicism on the part of State Department officials and the Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor and the President. Far from it. Both Kennedy and Johnson saw it as being absolutely correct, and they believed that the implications for further expansion in Asia by communism were catastrophic. Here's what Johnson said. "The declared doctrine and purpose of the Chinese communists remain clear. The domination of all Southeast Asia, the domination of the great world beyond, half a world away, has become our front door. If freedom is to survive in any American hometown, it must be preserved in such places as South Vietnam. It's up to us. We must have the courage to resist." The visuals in the film by the Johnson broadcast feature a picture of a laughing Mao. "We did not choose to be the guardians at the gate. but there is no one else. Nor would it surrender. Nor would surrender in Vietnam bring peace, because we learned from Hitler at Munich that success only feeds the appetite of aggression. It's really interesting as well, the focus at the time on Mao. The American war machine that was engaged in Vietnam, and the intentions of at least two presidents, the purpose of it directly references Mao himself. And there was a clear implication that, obviously, in the eyes of America, the North Vietnamese were the tools of Mao. And you know, there's some evidence, some degree of truth in that. Obviously, the relationship between China and Vietnam becomes much, much more complicated over the course of the 60s and 70s. But it was clearly from this piece of these two pieces of evidence alone, it's clear that there was an intention that it was China that was being fought to a standstill in Asia in a second Sino-American proxy war. The first, obviously, being Korea. Julia Lovell writes, "This was the 1960s incarnation of the domino theory, beloved of American politicians from the 1950s to the 70s, the belief that China was responsible for turning Vietnam communist, and that once Vietnam had been turned, a chain reaction would follow throughout the Far East and Southeast Asia. American obsession with Chinese Maoist expansionism thus helped to create the greatest foreign policy and military disaster in US history, the decade-long intervention into Vietnam. The insignia of the American Military Assistance Command in Vietnam, to be found on the upper arms of US soldiers serving in that theatre, was a sword cleaving in half, or perhaps stopping forces flowing out of a breach in, the Great Wall of China. Note especially Johnson's comparison between Mao and Vietnam, and Hitler in Munich. This analogy for the failure to act in Vietnam was political orthodoxy in 1960s America. To underestimate China's ambitions, said Dean Rusk, Secretary of State during the 1960s, would recapitulate the catastrophic miscalculation that so many people made about the ambition of Hitler. To America's leadership, Lin Biao's global application of Maoist revolution, long live the victory of the People's War, was a Maoist Mein Kampf, committing Beijing to undermine vulnerable colonial and newly independent nations. The Johnson administration, including me, interpreted the speech as bellicose and aggressive, remembered the Defence Secretary Robert McNamara, signalling an expansionist, an expansionist China's readiness to nourish local forces across the world. Lin's remarks seemed to us a clear expression for the basis of the domino theory. Okay, well, we'll come to Lin Biao a little bit later. Here we've got, if you listen to actually the previous podcast all about Neville Chamberlain's thoughts and his strategic world view prior to Munich, then you'll know that before 1938, appeasement was not seen as necessarily a particularly...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Bad thing, or hadn't really got the kind of the dirty word, the black name for itself that it has now. Following the Second World War, of course, appeasement is, or the refusal to accept appeasement, is a kind of an article of faith for the United States, and there was obviously a great deal of wishful thinking about what would have happened if the Allied powers had stopped Hitler at the remilitarization of the Rhineland in 1936. And, you know, the history of the world would have been radically, radically different. So there was a genuine belief that appeasement of Mao could not be allowed to persist, particularly in Asia or anywhere else. And so this kind of appeasement skepticism is one of the reasons why Vietnam is a place where the battle lines are drawn. Julia Lovell writes, "Long after the fact, the American architects of the war effort admitted that China's militant rhetoric had blinded them to the actuality of Chinese capacity to menace US interests. In retrospect," McNamara conceded 30 years later, "one can see the events of autumn 1965 as clear setbacks for China. But blinded by our assumptions and preoccupied with a rapidly growing war, we, like most of the Western leaders, continue to view China as a serious threat in Southeast Asia and the rest of the world." Jiang Zhai, a path-breaking historian of the Mao era, China's intervention in Southeast Asia, argues that the American debacle in Vietnam might have been avoided had the Americans not feared Chinese influence there so much. Chinese behaviour convinced leaders in Washington that Beijing was a dangerous gambler in international politics and that American intervention in Vietnam was necessary to undermine a Chinese plot of global subversion by proxy. By this reckoning, one of the hottest conflicts of the Cold War was motivated by the desire to contain and isolate communist China. So this is fascinating, and this throws a much-needed perspective on American foreign policy decision-making, on what it was that motivated America and American presidents to invest so heavily in Vietnam. Again, an awful lot of the time when we look at Vietnam and America's involvement in there, it's assumed, because there were Soviet supplies to North Vietnam, that this is some kind of Soviet-American proxy war. And the evidence looks far more as if it was a war to create a kind of a cordon sanitaire, a barrier to prevent further Chinese expansion, as America saw it. There were few officials in the State Department that fully understood the history of China and Vietnam. And if they had done, they would have understood that it had been an immensely antagonistic history for well over 1,000 years, that Vietnam had endured more invasions from China than any other country, and that the Chinese were traditionally deeply mistrusted in Vietnamese civil society and in Vietnamese politics. And so the idea of there being a kind of a Chinese imperium in Vietnam, or that Vietnam becoming a Chinese client state, was always highly unlikely. There's a really important bit in Imagined Communities by Benedict Anderson, where he makes this point already. He says, you know, that within a few years of the defeat of America by Vietnam by 1975, that Vietnam was at war with its supposed kind of communist northern communist neighbour, China. And the point he makes is that instead of there being some kind of Maoist international, that competing rival nationalisms are much more significant in the process of creating conflict and kind of slugging it out with one another. Making this point very well, Julia Lovell writes, "As the dragon in Red Chinese battle plan sprawled across the continents, US policymakers assumed that communist parties in old Indochina divided after the Second World War into Vietnam, Cambodia and Laos would exult at the dragon's advance. Instead, China, Vietnam and Cambodia each harboured their own and differing interpretations of the domino theory. China's leaders did view Vietnam and other parts of Indochina as dominoes in the world revolution, often speaking high-handedly of these territories as a natural extension of China's own interests. The Vietnamese feared that Indochina would become China's domino, while the Cambodians and the Chinese were suspicious of Vietnamese ambitions to dominate the region. Throughout the critical decade of the 1960s, at least, Western policymakers played down or ignored the fact that for centuries, if not millennia, the Vietnamese had perceived and resented the Chinese Empire as an expansionist power." Of course, Vietnamese and Cambodian relations were equally strained, and Cambodia viewed their more powerful cousin to the east as being once again a wannabe kind of hegemon within Indochina in general. In spring 1975, the dominoes of Indochina all fell to communism, but this was no unified tide of opposition to the free world. Instead, the historical enmity of Vietnam towards China and of Cambodia towards Vietnam drove two more wars in the region and destroyed alliances that Cold Warriors had once thought unbreakable. For 10 years, up to 1972, the US committed hundreds of thousands of American lives and billions of dollars to a war built on the assumption of Chinese control of Vietnamese communism. In the years that followed, an extraordinary game of musical alliances ensued. Kissinger and Nixon fell for the decaying charms of Mao and Zhou Enlai. Obviously, Nixon visited Mao in 1972. Vietnamese communism, until this point, founded on the teachings of Mao Zedong, the dazzling mirror, demaoified at speed. Both Vietnam and China scrambled to make up with their former bitter adversary in the United States, which, following the amoral creed of "my enemy's enemy is my friend," kept the Khmer Rouge in the United Nations until 1989. That's a story for a different time, I sense. Through the 1980s, China and Vietnam fought each other, while the US and Chinese together facilitated and funded war by the Khmer Rouge, easily the most extreme offshoot of global Maoism, against Vietnam. So the fact that US strategic assumptions about Vietnam, about the cohesiveness of Vietnamese communism, Maoism, and the monstrous incarnation of Maoism in the guise of the Khmer Rouge, the fact that it was so poorly understood, the internal dynamics between these three powers, meant that American decision-making within Indochina would be fatally flawed. And the idea that both America and China eventually had a material interest in both opposing and plotting to undermine Vietnam after the end of the American period of the Vietnam War, and that both powers used the Khmer Rouge to the point of actually, once the Khmer Rouge had been kicked out of power, America continued to arm, train, equip and feed Khmer Rouge fighters in border camps in Thailand in order to wage a guerrilla war against Vietnam in order to undermine it long after the end of official hostilities between America and Vietnam. This is part of this very tangled and complicated greater history of American involvement in Indochina. So we're going to talk a lot more about this. It's a fascinating topic, and Mao's involvement, as we'll see, in the Vietnam War goes from being welcome by the North Vietnamese, looking upon Mao as the progenitor of their own revolution and the person who had mastered the kind of the guerrilla war that people like Ho Chi Minh wanted to fight. As the North Vietnamese state became more established, the old suspicions, old resentments, and old fears about Chinese influence develop, and these are all fairly legitimate fears, resentments, and suspicions too. So we'll look at that. Now, by way of a mea culpa, in the previous podcast, I said that the East Fulham by-election was in 1936. It was not, as we all know, it was in 1933. So there you go, hold my hands up. I will carry on with this probably next week sometime. So thanks very much for listening. And do check out the new website we've got, explaininghistory.org. There is new content and blog posts are going up. And if you want some slightly longer reads, subscribe to Explaining History on Patreon. There's a link on the Explaining History website, and all contributions gratefully received. Thank you very much, everybody. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.